Shatteringness is devoted to those who know that there is something dreadfully wrong with the political and religious institutions which govern and influence our nation, and who recognize the considerable malfeasance inherent in the media, the military, and global economic influences. We realize that these institutions are the problem, which means they cannot be the solution. Therefore, our mission is to look behind the headlines so that we know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet. Because based upon the plague of universal and adverse political, religious, military, and economic influences, we have at most 15 years until all hell is unleashed, a complete economic collapse, world war, unrelenting propaganda, and the deaths of billions. As a result, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only escape from what will become planet hell. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll free, 877-376-45. I couldn't help but notice in the news this morning that Maliki, who is despised by most in Iraq, he is a puppet of the mullahs in Iran that the United States claims to be opposed to, that after squandering $4 trillion breaking Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, it's now reportedly in our interest, according to congressional leaders, to spend ever more money, giving the Iranian-backed government more war material. Nothing says prosperity, nothing says peace more than weapons. You know, it's being justified because Maliki, who is a Shia leader, hates Sunnis, and the most notorious of the Sunni Islamic terrorist organizations is Al-Qaeda. So he's justified the grants of billions of U.S. dollars in weaponry because he says it's to fight Al-Qaeda. But, of course, Al-Qaeda didn't exist in Iraq before the U.S. invasion, so if they're there now and need to be fought, it is because we brought them there. Yes, Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were arch enemies. They hated one another. There was absolutely no Al-Qaeda presence in Iraq prior to the United States invasion. And if it is there now and worthy of our $4 trillion squandering of assets breaking the country and more money now in weaponry, then it is because we brought them. Turning to the discussion we were having yesterday, I'd like to invest a little more time covering the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Obama, in remarks he made in Portland, Oregon, on April 1st, 2010, immediately after his new health care law was signed into law, a law written largely by his administration in Health and Human Services, that if you like your insurance plan, you will keep it. No one will be able to take that away from you. It happened. It hasn't happened yet. It won't happen in the future. It was a complete and utter lie. He knew it at the time. Now, as we were reviewing on our program yesterday, a key aspect of this new law is to impart total control of the healthcare industry under the guidance, if you will, of the U.S. government. In other words, you can no longer engage in the healthcare industry without conforming to the new government regulations. It's the U.S. government, which can't do anything right economically, which is nothing but a parasite on economic progress, has inserted its control over productive aspects of the economy by passing regulations that everybody must, the private industry must comply with. It's while the U.S. Constitution does not grant the U.S. government to interfere with businesses, it nonetheless is. And therefore, as a result of the Democrats passing Obamacare, if you have an insurance policy that does not include ambulatory patient services because you're young and don't want them or need them, too bad. You can't have such a policy. If you are a man or you're a woman who's had a hysterectomy, or you're a woman in her 50s, and you don't want maternity or newborn care to be part of your policy because paying for that would be an absolute waste of your money, too bad. You can't have that kind of policy. If you do not trust behavioral health drugs or behavioral health treatment because you've seen what psychiatrists and these medications have done to people and you don't want that to be part of your policy, too bad. You have to include it. If you are not an abuser of drugs or alcohol and see no benefit of having rehabilitative and habilitative services for drug abuse, substance abuse as part of your policy, too darn bad. The government says you can't have a policy without these things. If you're not a fan of wellness services, of the gobbledygook that is part of government extravagandas and controls and interference in our lives to try to shape human behavior to comply with their idea of the ideal individual, then it's just too darn bad. You can't have it. If you are a single man or a single woman and do not plan to have children in the foreseeable future, and you want a policy without pediatric services, tough. If you think that oral and vision care can be best achieved through working directly with your eye or your eye care or ophthalmologist, I should say, or your dentist, tough. You can't have a policy without those things included. So for almost all plans, this would be a big change. And even the smallest change disallows a program from continuing. In 2011, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is the department that wrote Obamacare, said that 62% of enrollees do not have coverage, for example, in maternity services. Another 34% of enrollees do not have coverage for substance abuse services. Some 18% of enrollees do not have coverage for mental health services. And it goes on and on. And, of course, very few have plans for dental and vision, which is why they're purchased separately, if at all. As a result, all of those policies are instantly null and void. Now, it is true that a very small percentage of Americans are self-insured. Most Americans get their insurance from their business because the U.S. government imposed this restriction on business, effectively making business inefficient. And the price of those policies has risen so dramatically, primarily because of the litigation associated with health care and the cost of getting drugs through the FDA, all of which are government-influenced, and none of which were dealt with as part of the Affordable Care Act. Businesses can no longer offer to employees, much less their families, the kinds of programs they were previously offering. The deductibles are going to have to go way up, and their participation in the programs are going to have to go way up because they've essentially doubled in cost, some tripling in cost. And yet, businesses will no longer be able to offer programs that just cover long-term hospital stay, for example, and serious illness or disability. They will not have that option anymore because, according to the Obama administration, you have to offer everything or nothing. It's going to destroy companies' abilities to offer health insurance to their employees, and it will be essentially impossible for individuals to get health insurance that they can afford. The purpose of all of that, of course, was planned, schemed directly by the Democrats and this administration. Socialist, secular humanists want everyone dependent upon government. Unfortunately, none of them are smart enough to recognize that the moment everyone is dependent upon government for their retirement, for their food stamps, for their housing, for housing subsidies, and for their health care, then at that point, government is bankrupt. Because the only source of revenue that government can spend come from businesses that are now crippled. But it is what they're trying to do. the law did allow, as the administration constantly says, grandfathered plans. But unfortunately, the plans are only grandfathered retroactive to March 23rd, 2010, when the law was signed into effect. And it is an infinitesimal percentage of health insurance policies that are written for more than 4 years, which would be the requirement. So if you have a plan and it doesn't have a 4 year or longer term, and it wasn't written prior to March 23rd of 2010, that plan is now null and void. And the government knows it. And it knows that the number of plans that could benefit from this grandfathered clause is infinitesimal. Moreover, even the small percentage that might have otherwise been more for more than 4 years and initiated prior to March of 2010, the slightest change in those plans for any reason, including a $5 increase in a deductible, would automatically negate the plan. Any change in area of coverage of the plan, any change in premium, as little as $5, would automatically pull the plan out of the grandfathered status, which means that if you like your insurance because you get what you need and you can afford what you are receiving, too bad. You can't have it anymore. The government will not allow it. Now, if you dig into the regulations, you will see that Health and Human Services wrote to them so tightly that a single provision that is changed, like a copayment of as little as $5, negates the grandfathering clause. The net effect is that no existing plan, not one, will meet the many tests for staying grandfathered. Everyone who has individual health care will lose it. They will not be able to retain their plan. And those who are employed by businesses, large businesses that offer plans to their employees, most of them will either have their deductibles raised to the point where they are thousands of dollars, or their participation will go from 15% to as much as 50% of the cost of those plans. Back in 2009 and 2010, when the Obama administration, through their Health and Human Services Department, was drafting the rules for Obamacare, it estimated that between 40 and 60% and 67% of policies in the individual market are in effect for less than 1 year. Now, the number that are in effect for greater than a year would probably be in the 5% range. So they knew at the time that they drafted the legislation, by their own admission and in writing, archived by the Department of Health and Human Services, they knew that at a very minimum, even if the date of for grandfathering was established on 2014 as opposed to 2010, that between 40 and 67% of policies wouldn't survive the first year, and that each year considerably more than 67% of policies would become invalid. You can't have your existing plan. People are losing their coverage because the mandated insurance is too expensive. Reminds me of the U.S. military. Anything the government does is too expensive. In recent days, administration officials have argued that the plans are going away because they are substandard. They lack essential protections. Yeah, it's, you know, I have never used drugs, so I guess I need the government to tell me that I need to pay for substance abuse. My wife and I are in our 50s. She has had a hysterectomy, but I have to have the government tell me that on my individual plan, it has to have maternity coverage. My children are both adults, and yet I need to have as part of our plan pediatric coverage. It is the government with doing what the government does worst. Hi, Larry. This is really a sad review of one of the most debilitating economic disasters ever to befall America.
Well, you know, Yada, we're all in this together.
The deal here is that even if you don't want to participate, you know, the whole deal with the Obama administration, it's always the case. They always lie about the nature of programs, even when they know that it isn't true. And their deal is, you know, if you like what you're doing, we're not going to interfere in your life. And yet full well, he knew for a fact that if you liked what you had, you couldn't continue with it. Because the government was going to dictate what you could have and what you couldn't have.
I mean, clearly this is a power grab, it's a money grab, and it's a way to destroy the small business owner. That's what it's about. I've seen my business drop off in the last several weeks since this has been a major topic. We're taking in less than half of what we usually do. We can't sustain that for long, by the way.
No. And that's really the reality is because every business now, if you're a medium or large business, let's say you employ more than, I don't know if it's 30 or 50 employees to qualify by the government standard, you're no longer able to offer insurance that is affordable for you to provide for your employees. You now have to change what you're offering so that it's the very Cadillac kind of policies that this administration was so adverse to, that, you know, it said it's not fair that people can afford Cadillac policies and others can't, and yet they're imposing Cadillac policies on the nation, including giving Cadillac policies to those who pay nothing for them. So
just realize that there comes a point in time that they're going to get the pushback, and I think this is it. You know, when we see the first day six people signed up, no matter how screwed up or
you know, rather than being called the Affordable Care Act, it ought to be called the Bankrupt Care Act.
Yeah, it ought to be called the Outrageous Care Act. You know, remember when Nancy Pelosi said, we've got to pass it to find out what's in it?
Oh,
you know,
great.
A physician said that's the definition of a stool sample, okay?
Yeah.
And that about sums it up. I mean,
well, you know, we're in a situation where the government is mandating that you have to participate in its program, and its program is disastrous. I mean, this program, since businesses cover about 55 to 60% of all insurance in America, is provided by businesses, and particularly large corporations. And based upon this act, they will no longer be able to do that and either remain competitive or to be able to do it on behalf of their employees. It's a bankrupt care act.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's going to make everyone dependent upon government, and it's going to be, your health care is going to be very similar to going to the airport, standing in the long line for TSA to have your rights violated. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. White House spokesman Jay Carney put it this way. He said it is correct that substandard plans that don't provide minimum services, that have lots of fine print and leave consumers in the lurch, often because of annual caps or lifetime caps or carve-outs for some pre-existing conditions, those are no longer allowed. Because the Affordable Care Act is built on the premise that health care is not a privilege, it is a right. And there should be no minimum standards for the plans available to Americans across the country. End quote. Now, if you want to find something with fine print, in fact, if you were just to take the Affordable Care Act and pile it up on your desk, it would be about 10 feet tall. There is nothing in the healthcare industry that even comes close to the fine print that is in that act. That's why Pelosi said, we won't know about the what's in the Health Care Reform Act, the Affordable Care Act, until it is enacted.
You know, I was in the insurance business for 14 years. I had my own agency. And I have to tell you that the cost of insurance went through the roof because government got involved.
Correct.
They put in state insurance commissioners, and then they approved this policy and didn't approve that policy and had this policy yanked. And so the costs went up and up and up due to the involvement of government in insurance.
Yeah.
Now,
a large part of that is twofold. One of those is that for any drug, and pharmaceuticals represent a huge percentage of the costs of medical care, that any drug now to be approved has to go through the FDA vetting process that has become so expensive. It's now on average $1 billion to get a new drug approved. And so the companies push these have to recap that.
I also do believe that the FDA is working against the American people. That's what I think. I think clearly it's there to harm us. It does not help us. There should not be an FDA, in my opinion.
No.
But
the other side of the equation, too, is that, Larry, the thing that the Affordable Care Act did not deal with is the single biggest cost in the health care delivery system, which is lawyers.
Sure.
And it's because the Democratic Party is hugely dependent upon the Trial Lawyers Association. And so we have no national tort reform, and therefore it's the large settlements that are awarded to groups of individuals suing pharmaceutical companies or health care providers or doctors that have driven up the cost. When my brother-in-law went into private practice after medical school about 15 to 20 years ago, at the time that he went into private practice, 85 to 90% of the physicians graduating from medical schools chose private practice over the large consortiums like Kaiser and the others where
they can't afford the insurance premium.
Today they can't afford the insurance premium, and it's shifted so that rather than 80 to 90% going into private practice, being independent contractors, now 80 to 90% of those graduating from medical school work for corporate health providers because they can't afford the liability insurance, malpractice insurance.
Well, you know, speaking of can't afford, when you see some of these premiums that are jumping 300-500%, and you know, a family of four is suddenly having to pay, $900 a month.
Right.
People are going to eat before they enroll in this. I'll tell you, I have no intention of signing up. None. Zero.
Right. And what they've done is they've said, all right, yes, so the premiums are going through the roof because the goal was to offer all manner of coverage to those who pay nothing for it. And the only way they could do that is to make the private insurance industry offer the same level of coverage to everyone who is actually paying for it. Now, when you do that, you create a policy that the vast majority of people, even those who are gainfully employed, can no longer afford. And, you know, the only solution that we had to our health care problem, and our health care problem is gargantuan in America. It's not gargantuan because of the number of uninsured, because that was only 15% of the country and less than 10% of young people under the age of 20. The problem is that we were, through Medicare and Medicaid, the government was becoming an increasingly large part of the healthcare business, and everything they were touching was turning into a financial boondoggle. And the only solution was to get government out of the healthcare business. And what Obamacare does is it makes government the only entity that you can turn to for healthcare insurance, because they're going to drive the private sector out of the business. And
go ahead. This is designed to bankrupt the country. That's what this is about.
Is to bankrupt the private industry's involvement in health care. But when that occurs, it's going to be no different from you trying to resolve a health care issue than you going to the airport 2 hours before a flight, standing in a long line only to be physically abused by TSA. It will be exactly the same experience. What I was going to say is that the solution was that if you can pay for some elaborate healthcare procedure, let's say that you need a heart bypass, if you can pay for it, great. That's your right. You live in a free society. You earned and saved your money. You can pay for it. Go ahead. But if you know, if you aren't paying for it, to require someone else to pay for your heart bypass is egregiously immoral. Yeah, that's what he says. It's now
right.
It's not. It's no longer a privilege. It's a right. So it's a if you're sitting at home eating bonbons all day, paying for them by food stamps, the SNAP program, and you receive your welfare check and you don't get off your lazy behind all day long, and you're totally dependent upon government and you don't do anything and you're fat and out of shape. And as a result of having no life, you get sick, and now government is supposed to bail you out. I mean, we are really taken responsibility away from everything.
Yeah, well, we've been explaining this for years. I know I have. I'm sure you have. Many of us have for years and years and years. And, you know, the bottom line is when you're setting up your little dictatorship and you plan on sinking a country, you really don't care what the truth is, do you?
No, of course not.
I mean,
and this is not a small issue. The fact that the President of the United States lied and created a program that effectively eliminates the ability of the private industry or the individual to obtain health care apart from U.S. government assistance is really the last straw economically. And it's also incredibly invasive. Most people don't want the federal government to know everything about them from a healthcare perspective.
Well, it's not only that. They're going to have to know everything about you financially, aren't they?
Of course, yes, because saying is that, okay, you know, as part of this program, yes, we understand that your deductibles are going to go through the roof, your premiums are going to go through the roof, and it's going to be sticker shock. You're going to look at 5, 6, 7 times increases in the cost of these programs, but the government is going to subsidize that. But it's only going to subsidize that if you're not personally responsible enough to have some savings, and you're not personally responsible enough to earn a living. You know, so if you can't earn a living, they're going to pay for it. They're going to reward failure in yet another way.
One of the things that the people out there that think they can sit on welfare and draw all these free goodies, when you kill the goose that lays the golden egg, there's no more golden eggs for you.
Correct. And this program is devastating because more than half of Americans get their health care from their employer. And when you make it impossible for the employer to provide health care and stay in business, you have killed the goose that lays the golden eggs.
There you go. Yeah.
That's why this is so devastating, is that this act is the final straw destroying the U.S. economy. It's probably why.
Yeah, and it's a several-pronged attack, too, because how are you going to take some young kid and bring him into to your business now, and you're going to make them full-time? No, you're not.
Right. No, you're not.
You're going to do 30 hours on them. And, right. And then, by the way, that kid now is responsible for going out and buying health care.
Yeah, and look at a large company. Let's say it's your company like Walmart. It has millions of, or at least hundreds of thousands, but it's probably in the range of millions of fairly low paid employees. You're going to change everyone that you can to a maximum of 30 hours a week so that you don't have to provide health care, because the health care costs will be such a high percentage of your overall expenses as a retailer. You won't be competitive if you provide them with health care. And so sufficient are no longer available.
The people, the kids that went out and rah-rah and were very trendy and let's all get in this together and you and me, you know, the bottom line is they're going to suffer first. They
of course,
are going
and in fact,
to suffer
actually, they'll suffer second. The first to suffer were the unions. The unions were the big supporter of nationalized health care. And so they were all for Obamacare until they realized that now they are no longer able to provide from their companies the level of insurance and health care that their employees were, union members were used to receiving. And also, businesses across the nation have begun to limit the hours of employees to 30 hours a week, down from 40, specifically to avoid the consequence of the Affordable Care Act because it's not affordable. And so unions were the first to be hit with this. Good thing. But young people that are working for companies in the retail business, for example, or the fast food business or that sort of thing, they're next. They'll all have either their hours cut to 30 hours a week or they're going to have to pay for their own health insurance. It'll be provided as part of a group. But the employee contribution is no longer going to be 15%, which is what it is on average today. It's going to exceed 50%.
Well, yeah,
this is devastating.
When you go to this less hours, and they're going to go to less hours, and in
right.
fact, many of them have already started.
Right.
And once this happens, they're going to be responsible for actually purchasing.
Right.
And they're going to find out how much good government did for them, or big government.
Oh, it's the price tag is going to be staggering. It's going to be in the range of $1,000 a month for a single individual. Way beyond what they'll be able to afford, particularly working for fewer hours. Welcome back to Shattering This. I was surveying some of the articles that have been printed on health care preparation for today's show. And I found a research paper. It was written by economists Jeff Brown and Amy Finkelstein. And it describes something that is should be of grave concern to many people. What they focus on is Medicaid's long-term cost to society. What they found is that if you have less than $250,000 in savings, that very few people are purchasing their own insurance. And the reason they're not doing so is because Medicaid has created such a disincentive to do so. Why would you want to buy insurance when the government has said that it will pay the bills? And so they call this a phenomenon crowd out, where the very presence of a government freebie drives people away from acquiring the services in the private market. And so the government is in competition with private industry and doing so unfairly because its program is entirely funded by private industry. It's a extraordinarily sad state of affairs. And, of course, then when people get into Medicaid, they find out that it is so restrictive and that the quality of the care is so poor and there are so few doctors and hospitals that will accept it, that they realize, well, they've been fleeced. They've become dependent on government, and government wasn't dependable. You know, there's another great example of this. You probably heard of COBRA, Larry. COBRA is the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act. If you're laid off or fired by a business, you have the opportunity, based upon this government program, to pay for your own a continuation of that insurance for a period of time. But the issue with COBRA, as with all government programs, is prohibitively expensive. I mean, you're
up by three or four times,
right.
And people were just getting laid off or fired from their jobs. Most people in the United States just make it week to week anymore. That's
right.
What's going on out here.
Yeah.
I did
read just to give a review of the insurance, the nature of health insurance in America, 55%. As of the last survey that was taken by the U.S. government, 55% obtain their insurance through their employer. So businesses are providing 55% of of insurance, and about 10% purchase it directly. The 10% that are purchasing it directly are those that are in small businesses, you know, mom-and-pop operations, so their business is still paying for it. That 65% is business-based. 65%. And we're going to eliminate the possibility of that being provided at an affordable rate, bankrupting business. It's kind of like what the government did on tax collection, where it forced businesses to be the tax collector, to withhold money from your paycheck. You know, about 31% of Americans are enrolled in public health insurance programs. This is a number that just over the last 10 years has increased almost 35 to 50%, depending if you're talking about Medicare or Medicaid. And, of course, Obamacare is designed to increase Medicaid by another 30% on top of that. It's why Medicaid and Medicare are the largest expenditures of the U.S. government and the fastest growing expenditures of the U.S. government.
Let me ask you something here, Yada.
Sure.
Obviously, this is very late in the game. They've already, decided they're putting it in play. It's already in play.
Well, it's already there. Yeah.
The
Republicans tried to defund it, but American people blamed the Republicans for the budget impasse, and no one wanted to pay any attention to the fact that Obamacare was a disaster.
These same American people, now here's my point. The same American people are going to be groveling in the street in 24 months.
Of course.
They really will.
Yeah.
What
exactly
in the hell do they think is going on here?
What they're going to do is they're going to make all Americans dependent upon government. And what the government has done through quantitative easing and this bond buyback program, which will be a report that I'm going to cover on either Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday I'm going to have as a regular guest Craig Smith as part of the program again. And we're going to cover quantitative easing and bond buyback programs where the Federal Reserve is literally creating money out of thin air, fiat money out of thin air, and then using it to buy treasury bonds and using it to buy bank bonds. And it is this illusion of money that is currently funding the U.S. government's giveaway programs. But there's only a very limited amount of time where that magic trick will continue to produce the desired illusion. And soon the illusionist is exposed. People will lose their confidence in the currency and in the economy, and it will all collapse. We'll return after the commercial break.